So, The Strange Properties of Sunspots is the title that Nigel suggested, but in the end I'm not going to talk about all of the strange properties. There are many strange properties of sunspots, but I'm going to focus today mostly on the structure of a sunspot penumbra, tell you a bit about what observations have revealed over the last 10 years or so about this, more detail because we have higher resolution observations. But these details have, in fact, suggested some new ideas that give us a new theoretical understanding of how a penumbra forms and is maintained. And some of this work is collaborative. I'll be mentioning that as we go along. I should also mention that in the context of this meeting, I consider the sunspot to be the best laboratory for magnetohydrodynamics that we have, because it's under astrophysical conditions, highly conducting and so on, large scale, large magnetic Reynolds numbers, all the things you'd want in a laboratory. You can see waves in these. It's not difficult at all to observe various kinds of MHD waves. But also, it's the only astrophysical object with an appreciable magnetic field that we can observe in detail. And when you see how complicated it is, it gives you some pause when you extrapolate MHD to situations in which we don't have this level of detail. There have been rapid advances in high-resolution observations, and this is an example of the state-of-the-art. The most powerful solar telescope now for high-resolution observations is the 1-meter Swedish telescope on La Palma, recently upgraded to 1 meter, and also with adaptive optics. And it's producing images such as these that you see here. To give you an idea of the scale, the tick marks, if you can just see those on this diagram, are 1 arc second apart, or 700 kilometers on the surface of the sun. And the resolution in these images is 1/10 of an arc second. That is 1/10 of that spacing, or 70 kilometers. Now, you don't get this resolution just by opening the shutter. You have to work a bit to get this. You can do it in a couple of ways. The so-called post facto methods, you can take bursts of many, many exposures and then use techniques such as speckle interferometry or phase diversity methods to correct the image after the fact for the distortion due to atmospheric seeing, which, of course, is the limiting factor for observations from the ground in these cases. But in order for a telescope like this to give you results near its diffraction limit over any appreciable fraction of its time, you need to go to adaptive optics. And this has been a real breakthrough in solar observations. This shows an example at the Dunn Solar Telescope at Sacramento Peak of what happens with this higher order adaptive optics system that's been working there a couple years, with a system off and system on. These are sort of typical seeing conditions, so without adaptive optics you can barely resolve the granulation, so your resolution is no better than than 1 arc second. Yet with adaptive optics on, you can approach the diffraction limit of that telescope, which is just a little over 1/10 arc second. And the important thing is it can maintain this sharpness over periods of tens of seconds, during which time you are able to do the kinds of exposures you need for spectroscopy, which require much longer exposures. I want to point out that besides the sunspot in this image, we have some pores, which are basically sunspots without penumbrae. And I'm going to be talking a fair amount about the transition between a pore and a penumbra, because of sunspot forms by a conglomeration of pores in the atmosphere. Adaptive optics, by the way, for a solar telescope is quite a challenge. For nighttime telescopes, you can use a guide star, which is effectively a point source, as a source for measuring wavefront distortions, and the behavior of the distortions of a point source are fairly well known and can be calculated simply. For solar observations, there is no point source, and you must rely on features such as a pore, or in fact, the AO systems now are designed to work just on the granulation pattern itself, so you can look away from magnetic activity. And it just takes an works on an image, a reference image of the granulation, which must be constantly refreshed. So it was quite an amazing advance to be able to do adaptive optics with the sun. Let's turn to some theory now, and let's think for a moment of an ideal theoretician sunspot, a sort of round symmetric spot, and think a bit about modeling that from MHD modeling. We know since the time of Hale, 1908, that the sunspot is a seat of a very strong magnetic field, basically a big flux tube of magnetic field coming up through the surface. And we could think of modeling it, and let's, for the moment, ignore this striated filamentary structure of the penumbra and just consider an axisymmetric flux tube. And model it as, say, a magnetohydrostatic configuration. Now, because the solar atmosphere is highly stratified, with density dropping approximately exponentially with height, if you're going to have a mechanical balance, one thing you need to do is sort of balance the pressures, the magnetic pressure. You know, the Lorentz force can be broken up into an isotropic pressure and then a force due to curvature of field lines due to the magnetic tension. The magnetic pressure force adds to the gas pressure inside the tube, and that must balance the external pressure. And since the external pressure is dropping rapidly with height, then the magnetic pressure has to drop with height, and the tube has to flare out to reduce the magnetic field strength. So we have a flaring magnetic flux tube. We can understand the darkness of the sunspot, the coolness of the umbra, in two ways, or two effects. One is the fact that the magnetic field inhibits the convection, makes it much less efficient, so you establish a greater superadiabatic temperature gradient and the surface is darker. The other effect is that because motions are constrained in MHT to be largely along field lines, so is the heat transport by convection. And so if you imagine heat transport only along field lines, then just the flaring geometry, the fact that the cross-sectional area is increasing with height, gives you a dilution of the flux and a cooling. That was first pointed out by Fred Hoyle, actually, in the late 40s, and the inhibition convection idea goes back to Biermann in the early 40s. You could model the inhibition of convection, for example, by using a mixing length theory of convection with a reduced mixing length. And you can produce reasonably acceptable models. The simplest model would have, say, a potential field with an azimuthal current sheet. That isn't quite sufficient. There really are volume currents in the field as well. But in most of the static configurations, you do run into the problem of an instability. Spot becomes flute unstable. That instability can be stabilized to a certain extent by gravity, but it's pretty much understood that you need some kind of dynamical stabilization. That is, a sunspot is not a static configuration, but is dynamically stabilized by some kind of inflow on the scale of a supergranule that gives a kind of collar flow. So you could go a step further, and people are beginning to do that in constructing dynamical models. This is a very interesting one by Hurlburt and Ruckledge, in which you drive convection in a cylindrical box. So these are all cylinders. If you rotate this around the left axis, it's an axisymmetric cylinder of convection in which you put magnetic flux. You drive the convection by imposing a heat flux, and then let this evolve in time until you produce a kind of steady state. And the flux gets swept to the side and concentrated to form something that looks like a sunspot with the flux tube coming up and flaring out. And this is a sequence of models in which the total magnetic flux increases through these. And so this one might be a good model of a small pore, and it has this single collar cell. And as you get to larger ones, you have the collar cell, and then you have a counter-rotating cell here, which would be associated with the moat around the sunspot. And Hurlburt and Ruckledge speculated about the configuration that might occur in the sun, such that the collar cell was hidden beneath the penumbra. You don't see it, but what you do see is this counter cell or moat. And this is essentially then an annular supergranule that's anchored around the sunspot as it's cooled. Now, one feature of this model, and it's also true of all of the static models, is that as you increase the total magnetic flux, the field lines at the outer end of the tube, if you define it at some, say, field strength, the field lines become more inclined to the vertical. And so one basic idea we're going to explore is that somehow there's an instability associated with this field becoming more and more inclined that leads to the formation of the sunspot penumbra. And that would be consistent with observations. Well, let's now go to the real truth, which is that the sunspot is not axisymmetric. The penumbra is very complicated. And not only is it complicated geometrically, but it's also time dependent. This is also from images from the Swedish telescope of a piece of a penumbra. This is actually a movie. Let's run the movie, and you can see that there's a lot going on. You have granulation outside here. I guess I don't have this cycling, so let's run it again. You can see bright features along the filament moving in and out, so-called penumbral grains and so on. Exposure is not ideal for that, but you see suggestions of umbral dots indicating convection in the umbra. There's a lot we could say about this, and in this meeting over the last few months, we've talked a lot about magnetoconvection, and there's possible interpretations of these motions in terms of convection in a magnetic field. But most interest for the rest of my talk is not the intensity pattern, but rather the magnetic field pattern in the sunspot. And this is a very curious pattern. This is what is the most strange, I would say, about the penumbra, is the way in which the magnetic field is organized into different filaments of different inclination. And the idea is that in the dark filaments, the magnetic field is more horizontal than it is in the bright filaments. This slide may be a bit busy. I've had three different sketches to illustrate that. This simple one, this is meant to show that the difference of inclination between the field in the bright and dark filaments is around 30 degrees. But as you go across the penumbra, both inclinations increase. When you get to the outer penumbra, the bright field in the bright filaments is inclined at, say, 70 degrees to the vertical, whereas in the dark filaments, it's actually horizontal and even diving down below. There are actually many so-called returning flux tubes that dive back down below the surface. And that's a bit of a mystery because of magnetic buoyancy. Why would these tubes want to be below the surface when there's a natural tendency for them to float to the top? I'll talk a little bit about magnetic buoyancy in a moment. In this sketch, we tried to indicate that the more horizontal field in the dark filaments can emerge from the sunspot in one of two ways. It can remain nearly horizontal, slightly above the visible surface, and form the so-called magnetic canopy, hugging the surface at a low level. Or it can be in the form of these returning flux tubes that are submerged. And the idea we're going to present is that this submergence can be understood in terms of magnetic flux pumping by the surface convective layer, the so-called granulation layer. Before I go on with that, though, I should point out that although this geometry of the magnetic field is a little bit puzzling and unexpected, it does resolve a couple of conundrums. One being that we know that most of the magnetic flux, the majority of the magnetic flux emerging from a sunspot, actually comes up through the penumbra. This was not appreciated before, say, around 1990. Before that, it was kind of thought that the penumbra was a low-lying magnetic field that bent over and went across and lay above, essentially, field-free convection below it. But we know now that actually more than half the flux has to emerge. So that means that there has to be an appreciable vertical component of magnetic field throughout the penumbra. On the other hand, we have the well-known Evershed flow, this systematic outflow across the penumbra, which we know to be radial and essentially horizontal. So how can we reconcile, as MHD theorists, a horizontal flow and a substantial vertical component of the field? And the answer is that they occur in different places. The Evershed flow is confined to the dark filaments, and much of it, in fact, in these returning flux tubes. So most of the emerging flux is in the bright filaments, and the horizontal flux then carries the Evershed flow. This also clears up one of the mysteries concerning the Evershed flow, and that is the Evershed effect seems to disappear very abruptly at the end, at the edge of the penumbra. It seems unlikely that a flow would stop that quickly, but indeed what's actually happening is the flow is continuing along the tube, but it's submerged. So it either submerges where we can't see it, or some of it continues up along the canopy, but that may disappear simply because the spectral line we're looking in is formed at a lower height in the atmosphere. Well, how do we know about these vector magnetic fields? I just thought I'd mention briefly that you observe not just the strength of a magnetic field from the Zeeman effect, but you can observe the vector, the full vector magnetic field. And in order to do that, you do what's called, come to be called Stokes polarimetry, where you measure the full polarization state of the line in the line profile, of the light in the line profile. So by constructing the four Stokes parameters, that's total intensity, two states of linear polarization at 45 degree angles, and circular polarization, those four states, you can construct the full polarization state. And from that, you can do an inversion, different kind of inversion than Douglas was talking about this morning. It involves some assumptions about a model for the field, usually involving two components and some height variation. It's a very technical subject that I won't go into, but you can do an inversion that then produces the vector magnetic field. And this is an attempt to show that by showing a continuum image of a sunspot. This is actually a little bit older work. There's been even better resolution work come out more recently, but this shows the point I want to make. Here's field magnitude. You can see the field strength from about 3,000 Gauss in the center of the umbra, tailing off to something on the order of 1,000 Gauss across the penumbra. This is the azimuthal angle, so this would measure a departure from these filaments' magnetic fields coming out radially from the center. I guess the only point to make here is that since the image looks very much like the color code, it shows that there's very little twist in this sunspot. There's very little azimuthal deflection. So the field lines are coming out essentially in along radial lines in planes cut through the center. But now if we look at the zenith angle, the angle measured between the field magnetic field vector and the local vertical, that zenith angle then shows this pattern, vertical at 0 degrees near the center. And then when you get across the penumbra, I hope you can see this because it's rather faint, you see these spokes of fields. So the spokes of purple coming out here are the more vertical components, and in between those spokes of more vertical field is the more horizontal field in the dark filaments. And if you match these up in detail with the intensity pattern, you find, as I've said, the more inclined fields, more horizontal fields are in the dark filaments. Now, other hints about sunspot structure come from coronal measurements. In the 80s, I think, there were X-ray measurements that suggested that some of the flux loops coming out of the sunspot penumbra go a long ways away to connect with other sunspots or other parts of the active regions. And this has become even more clear now with these wonderful images from TRACE. So here we have an image from TRACE of coronal loops connecting two sunspots. And here's a white light image of the two spots to the same scale and everything lined up to be in the same position. And what you see are that many of these illuminated coronal loops, which are, of course, magnetic flux tubes, are going a great distance outside the penumbra, connecting a long way away. Now, what this tells us is that the old picture of perhaps having some kind of interchange convection in the filaments, bright and dark filaments being essentially kind of convective rolls and interchanging field, that picture really can't be right, because there's really no way you could imagine a field of this large scale emerging from the penumbra being able to reconnect on any reasonable time scale with the horizontal field. So this has led us to believe then that these two components remain largely distinct. The bright and dark, or the two inclinations of field line, remain essentially distinct, over the lifetime of the sunspot. So that's another piece of the puzzle. So let's put this together with the idea of magnetic flux pumping to try to form some consistent picture of how the penumbra forms and is maintained. This is a sketch from the first paper we wrote on this subject in Nature a couple of years ago. This sketch derives from Nick Brummel, who's the Leonardo da Vinci of MHD, I guess. He's a a good artist, and but I liked his pencil sketch, but then nature wanted to fancy it up with color, so this is the end result. Still vaguely resembles yours, Nick. But so a lot of the ideas are presented here. We have flux coming out. There's the more vertical flux coming out of bright filaments. In the dark filaments, you have stuff field coming out and hugging the canopy, and then you have these returning field lines that return below the surface. This is an attempt to indicate the moat cell, the systematic outflow at the surface in the moat. But schematically, we're trying to indicate, the squiggly arrows indicate the surface granulation layer just outside the sunspot. And this is an area in which magnetic flux gets pumped downward and holds these flux tubes submerged. And this magnetic flux pumping turns out to be then a key ingredient in understanding a lot of different aspects about a sunspot. As I said, it's kind of surprising that we have these flux tubes returning in spite of their magnetic buoyancy. So some of you may not be familiar with magnetic buoyancy. I have a little sketch here that explains the idea very simply. If you imagine that you have a flux tube that's isolated, so we have a bundle of field lines, let's say just a simple circular cross-section. Outside the field is zero, inside, say, uniform field embedded in the gas. Then, of course, to sustain that, it's driven by an azimuthal current around the surface. But if you would very shortly, on a very short time scale, establish pressure equilibrium so that the gas pressure plus magnetic pressure inside the tube would balance the external gas pressure. Since there's no field outside, there's no magnetic pressure there. So you have pressure equilibrium, so the gas pressure inside is less than the external gas pressure. And then from the equation of state, you know, if they're anything like in thermal equilibrium, if the temperatures are pretty close to being equal, then that means that the density, gas density inside is less than that outside, and so the tube is like a balloon and wants to float upward in the stratified atmosphere under gravity. So somehow the magnetic flux pumping is overcoming this in the area outside the sunspot. So let me present now the ideas that we've formulated on how a penumbra forms and is maintained. And this is taken from a more recent paper, and you can see who the collaborators are. I'll talk a little bit more about the collaboration in a moment. We know from observations that the sunspot forms after an active region is emerged on the surface and magnetic field gets concentrated into intense elements which coagulate into pores, that is, small spots without penumbrae, and these coagulate. They're driven by a systematic flow associated with the supergranulation level flow. It coalesces to form a sunspot. So we have, you can imagine, a conglomeration into a flux bundle in which the magnetic flux is, total flux is increasing with time. As this flux increases, the inclination of the field lines at the outer edge keeps increasing, the inclination to the vertical, becoming more horizontal. That we know from both static and dynamic models. So we can imagine that there's some critical angle at which this axisymmetric configuration would become unstable to a kind of fluting perturbation, azimuthally periodic perturbation, that would then create fluting. But this is not the classical kind of plasma fluting instability driven by the field itself, but rather a convectively driven instability that causes this initial fluting. So one can imagine, and by the way, that has been shown in some calculations. Hurlburt et al. Kind of related to the model I showed you earlier, Tildesley and Boussinesq approximation, where they've actually shown the existence of this convectively driven fluting instability, admittedly in idealized models, but nevertheless suggestive that this could be happening in the spot as well. So then the idea would be that the nonlinear development of this would lead to some finite amplitude fluting, so you would and then have a azimuthal variation of the inclination of the field around the sunspot. But that does not form a full-blown penumbra, but rather a kind of proto-penumbra, which is also supported observationally, where you see just a kind of weak filamentation around the pores. And then the more horizontal spokes, if you have some of this fluting around there, then the parts of the field that are more horizontal would get grabbed by the convection outside in the granulation layer and pumped downward through this process of magnetic flux pumping, which I will demonstrate with some numerical simulations in a moment. So some fraction of the more horizontal flux gets pumped downward, forming these returning flux tubes. Some of the other horizontal flux may float up and form this low-lying canopy, forming the configuration that we observe in the penumbra. Now, this mechanism, as I said, explains a number of aspects of sunspot physics. And one of those is the fact that these smallest sunspots are smaller than the largest pores. So if you imagine that sunspots form as a transition from a pore, a growing pore that's accumulating flux, to a sunspot, then that transition has hysteresis. Or in the language of nonlinear systems, as proposed by Ruckledge, Schmidt, and Weiss, that this is a subcritical bifurcation. The flux pumping provides a mechanism for that kind of hysteresis, in that once the penumbra is formed and the flux tubes are pumped downward, then as a sunspot decays and magnetic flux peels away and it decays, you can actually, through flux pumping, then maintain the penumbra even when the total flux is reduced below the amount that was there when the initial transition to the sunspot occurred. So in this way, the flux pumping provides a physical mechanism for this hysteresis that had been imagined in the earlier work, but not tied so strongly to a physical mechanism.
That,
yes, Bob.
Is it then true that all the small sunspots that satisfy this are old sunspots?
That's a good question. I think the impression about those is just done from statistical analysis of areas of sunspots with no respect to age. But that's a very good point, and I don't think anyone's ever looked at it in that detail. So that would certainly be the prediction of this kind of model. Nigel, do you recall when you were working with Alistair, if there are any data? My impression is there wasn't any age-dependent associations. Okay. And it would be consistent with this idea then? So. Okay. Obviously something I need to look into. Thanks. Good point, Bob. Okay, so we've made magnetic flux pumping kind of the central kind of mechanism in this argument. Let's talk a little bit about that. It goes back to previous ideas, previous ingredients that go into flux pumping. Flux expulsion, when you have convective eddies, the combined effects of advection and diffusion of the field tends to exclude the flux, push the flux out of the eddies and drive it into the areas in between the convective eddies. Turbulent diamagnetism, which comes out of mean field magnetohydrodynamics. If you have turbulent magnetic pressure and there's a gradient of that pressure, then magnetic flux tends to be pumped down that gradient. And then topological pumping in a stratified convection where you have this asymmetry between isolated rising plumes and a network of descending down plumes. So it's a topological difference between the isolated rising flow and the network of downflows that gives rise to a net pumping in the direction of the flow in the network. But it turns out that in stratified compressible convection, those effects are not the most important, but rather the most important is the strong asymmetry between the broad, gently rising plumes and the concentrated, rapid downfalling plumes. The very high velocities that are produced in these narrow downfalling plumes gives a strong asymmetry to the convective velocities that leads to the net statistical effect of a downward transport of field. And this flux pumping has been investigated by a number of authors in the context of how flux might be pumped out of a convecting layer into a stably stratified layer below. And the motivation for these studies was connected to the solar dynamo, where you're interested in how magnetic flux gets transported from the convection zone into the tachocline. So in the context of an alpha-omega interface dynamo. You have an omega effect in the talcocline, an alpha effect in the convection zone. They communicate by diffusion in the simplest model. Diffusion is in some ways too slow, but magnetic flux pumping provides you a more rapid way of getting poloidal field down into the tachocline, where it's then stretched out in the toroidal direction. What we're proposing is somewhat different then. It has to do with the fact that the surface granulation layer is a thin, highly convecting, vigorous boundary layer of intense convection that lies over a more quiescent convection in the rest of the convection zone. So we're imagining that the shallow granulation layer pumps flux down at least to the base of that layer, maybe just a couple thousand kilometers, to keep fields near the surface submerged outside the spot. And we say this pumping mechanism submerges the flux tubes just outside the penumbra. In order to investigate that, we have done some numerical simulations, but let me first show the granulation layer that I'm talking about. This is just a movie of the surface granulation, the well-known granulation pattern with plumes of rising gas and these network of intense downflows. That's the convection we want to model. So let me turn now to these numerical simulations. This is collaboration with Nick Brummel and Steve Tobias and Nigel Weiss, all of whom are here today, actually. Nick developed an original compressible convection code, that's the basis for the code. Nick and Steve together modified this code to include MHD and, as I said, had done modeling of flux pumping related to the dynamo, and now the more recent simulations with their code and this collaboration among the four of us have been directed toward flux pumping that might be associated with the granulation layer. Just a few details of the models. It's done in a rectangular 3D box. It's 3D simulations that represent a near surface layer, including the granulation and some substantial part of the convection zone below that. These are idealized calculations in the sense that a number of the parameters are assumed constant. But it's a two-layer model in the box. We have an upper layer that's representing the granulation and the lower layer representing the weaker underlying convection. You start convection by making the initial distributions of temperature and so on polytropic, and then you can determine the stability. You can make the upper layer strongly unstable all the time, and then, in fact, in the calculations, we've changed the stability of the lower layer, starting out with one that was just slightly convectively stable. The convenient parameter there is a so-called stiffness parameter, which measures the difference between the true polytropic index of the initial state and the adiabatic or neutrally stable state. And the way it's defined here, S would be positive if the lower layer was convectively stable, or negative if it's unstable. And we've done cases of both signs of S here. Periodic boundary conditions, the horizontal boundaries are stress-free and impermeable, but the magnetic field is free to diffuse. We apply a zero boundary condition horizontal field, which allows field to diffuse across the upper lower surfaces. So although field can't be transported by gas motions out of the box, it can diffuse out of the box. So it's a lossy kind of calculation where field can leave the box. We drive the convection with constant vertical heat flux across the bottom boundary, maintain constant temperature at the upper boundary. It's run at relatively large Rayleigh and Chandrasekhar numbers. Rayleigh number is a measure of the vigor of the convection. Chandrasekhar number is a measure of the strength of the magnetic field versus diffusive effects. And you can see it's a fairly substantial 3D grid. These are fairly significant calculations running for weeks at a time. Now, the way we approach this is to run the simulation without a magnetic field, starting with the initial state, and then let it run until it reaches a statistical state where you have the fully developed convection, and then put in a uniform slab of horizontal field somewhere in the upper layer and see what the fate of that is. Here are the results of one of the simulations, and what's shown at the top. Now, this is a case where S was slightly positive, so the lower layer is weakly stable. Admittedly, not the best model for the convection zone, but this is where we started because Nick and Steve had experience with these calculations. So in the upper layer, this is at time t equals 0, which is the time at which the magnetic field is introduced. So this has already been running for some time, reaching a steady state of pure hydrodynamical convection with no field. You can see the pattern of velocities. We have, say, half a dozen kind of granules here in the upper layer, and you can see some penetration into the lower layer. The vertical scale, by the way, has been exaggerated here. The dimensions in units of the upper layer, I think, are 6 by 6 by 3.5 in the vertical. And this is the convective pattern. And then at t equals 0, we introduce a uniform magnetic field in the y direction in a thin slab, and then follow the evolution. This is maybe slightly after t equals 0. You can already see a little bit of structure. And when the field is introduced, it's a very strong field, and the density of the gas inside is reduced so that you have pressure continuity across the interface, so you don't excite a lot of waves with a pressure imbalance. And the field is strong enough that, in fact, the slab is highly evacuated. And then you follow this in time. This is some time later in units of the sound crossing time. The state showing just the square of the magnetic field strength, you see the net result is some of this magnetic field has been pumped downward to the base of the layer. You can see the pumping actually a little better by plotting the vertical distribution of the horizontal average of the y component of the field. That's the initial field direction. And then plot that as a function of time. So this is the profile of the horizontal flux. You start out near t equals 0 with this slab, which runs off the scale here. And then you see these are profiles for successive times. Initially, you see flux rising because of buoyancy, so you see a peak moving up. But then you see a secondary peak forming, and that's due to the flux pumping. And at the end of an initial kind of dynamical or pumping phase, you're left with flux that's been pumped down just to the base and a little bit penetrating into the stable layer below, forming this maximum. And then this is maintained by the pumping, but just slowly diffuses away. As I say, this was a diffusive calculation. The diffusion time for the sunspot, however, would be very much longer and really not of interest because the sunspot actually doesn't live as long as these diffusion times, but breaks up by other mechanisms. And this is an image showing just a snapshot of the convection. So we're below the surface now, looking up and at the surface of the box. Just below the surface, we've plotted up here the velocity pattern. So yellow to red is the intense, the upflows in the center of the granules, and the blue network is the intense downflows in the network around the granules. And these blue blobs are meant to show these strong descending plumes. And what they are essentially are illuminated surfaces of constant entropy or vorticity squared, which tends to be concentrated in these intense downwelling plumes. So that shows where the most vigorous downward pumping is being done. And then the white lines are just magnetic field lines crossing some randomly chosen points showing different states. There's some field lines up near the surface which may actually be about to escape. Then there's some tangled field lines being pumped in the middle. And down at the base, where just about the stable layer, you can see a number of field lines that have been pumped downward and are being maintained there by the pumping mechanism. So now we've done calculations with a more realistic value of the stiffness parameter, this negative one. Now the bottom layer is also slightly unstable, so now we have a larger scale, more quiescent convection occurring in the lower layer as well. But the point is that the convective pumping still works in this case. This just shows the velocity and magnetic energy plots at an early stage, not long after the magnetic slab was introduced, and then at a later stage where it's been pumped, you see again field pushed downward. And the pumping not only moves field around, but it actually intensifies it. These plumes can create field strengths on its own of up to equipartition values because of the dynamical effects of the pumping. And again, with the plots of horizontal average, you see a pumping phase leaving you with a maximum of the magnetic flux pumped down to the base. Now, one way in which these simulations do not represent the sunspot is that in the sunspot, since all the field lines of the penumbra are kind of anchored into this central bundle, there's an additional force that would tend to oppose the submergence, not just buoyancy, but curvature of the field lines would tend to want to bring them back up as well. So we need to investigate that. And this just represents one attempt to do that. The simplest attempt that we could imagine was, in addition to the horizontal slab, to put a very strong vertical slab of field which would suppress convection in some central core, which you could imagine being the umbra. And by doing so, then they're preventing the motions. Then as field lines get pumped downward, they're going to have to drag the field down through here. It's going to offer some resistance, and so you're going to develop some curvature forces that might oppose the pumping. Again, that's kind of, this is just kind of a first attempt. But the pumping works again in this configuration. This is a little movie just showing the pumping. These are that's a plot of, again, B squared, the magnetic field strength. The net effect is to pump it downward. And again, we have these kinds of figures at an early and a later stage of the field horizontal field distribution. Now we're continuing this work, and more realistic simulations are underway. And in particular, if you remember the figure I showed you of the simulations of Hurlburt and Ruckelage, where you actually create a sunspot by driving large-scale convection, I think a reasonable goal would be to try to have a simulation that would include both that large-scale convective confinement of the flux tube plus the highly superadiabatic surface layer convection that would do the pumping. And that's the direction in which we're working. Currently doing simulations that have a magnetic field that kind of arches over and looks a little bit more like a sunspot, and those are underway. Well, there's one more aspect of sunspot physics that I think the flux pumping helps to explain, and I can just close with that briefly, and that has to do with magnetic features that move outward across the moat outside the sunspot. So this is a longitudinal magnetogram. So white and black are opposite polarity magnetic fields. You can see the strong spot extending out to here. And then you see this pattern of flux that's kind of been swept out. This is essentially the chromospheric network, or the supergranulation scale. So the moat is this kind of annular region around there. And this is a movie. And what you can look for is magnetic fields, little knots of magnetic field moving outward across the moat, and in fact of both polarities. Here you see white and black polarity. You see features of both polarities. So let me run this film, and I hope you can see at least some of those patterns. Here are some of these bipolar features moving outward. There are also monopolar features moving outward. And these features have been known since the early 70s, come to be known as moving magnetic features. And they're not all of the same type, actually. So if we go on to talk about these in a little detail, in an article for the Encyclopedia of Astronomy and Astrophysics, Dick Shine and Alan Tytle divided them into three different types, depending on their behavior. And these can be interpreted in the context of flux pumping. Now, let me talk about the type two. First of all, these are single elements of the same polarity as a sunspot. And it's long been known that those are associated with the decay. That is the way in which a sunspot decays. Little bundles of flux of the same polarity just peel off and move outward and across the moat and are carried away. So that represents a true decay of the spot. And flux pumping is not necessarily a part of that. However, these features of type 1, which are the bipolar pairs of magnetic elements moving outward at about the moat flow speed, can be interpreted in this way as being a stitch of that submerged flux tube that pops up through the surface. This, in fact, was an idea. This configuration for those bipolar elements was first suggested by Jack and Karen Harvey in the early 70s in this paper, but they really didn't provide a physical mechanism for why this tube would be largely submerged and then to kink up. But in the context of the flux pumping, you can imagine that we have a flux tube that has been pumped downward to the base of the convection region. But then because of some relaxation locally of the pumping or a particularly strong upward plume, a stitch of that tube is comes up and comes to the surface, and then because of the rapidly decreasing density, this upper flux tube would sort of explode up. You would actually see a signature in the chromosphere as well, which indeed you do. And so the flux pumping then provides a physical mechanism for why you might expect that kind of configuration. Another type is a type 3, which are elements of the opposite polarity. So here's the polarity of this field line coming down through the surface. And these move out very rapidly at very high speeds. And there one could imagine that the field had been pumped downward, but then the pumping is relaxed. And because this tube is entering at a shallow angle, then as it would rise up, even slowly, it would produce a rapid motion along the line of sight. So in the context of flux pumping, that's how one could explain these type 3 convection, moving magnetic features. So let me close then with a summary of why we feel that the downward pumping then is a key ingredient in the mechanism for forming the filamentary penumbra with its interlocking comb field. So it also relies on the idea of these bright and dark filaments remaining distinct, and in the dark filaments, some of the horizontal flux, magnetic flux, pumped downward by the granulation just outside the spot. Our numerical simulations so far, although idealized, fully support this idea. In fact, the flux pumping mechanism is really incredibly robust. But more realistic simulations, something that looks more like sunspot geometry, are underway. It explains this hysteresis in the transition from a pore to a sunspot. It explains why these flux tubes are submerged in the first place in spite of the buoyancy. And in this last part, I tried to show you how it might explain the behavior of the moving magnetic features. So that's the end of my case. Thank you.
So eventually this stuff that's been pumped down has to come up at some other
yes.
point.
Yes.
It's not always permanently.
And I should have said that
there's sort of a
you can imagine in this figure, Steve, that it's pumped up out to about here where the moat flow stops. But then there's a converging flow here where this annular moat meets the other supergranular patterns which have velocities in this direction. So there's a zone of convergence here. So imagine the flux would accumulate there, and probably that's where the field then reemerges. At
so
that point,
sort of extra bits of white around there
of the same polarity would be that flux coming up, right? Thank you, because I meant to mention that point when I was showing this figure. So we don't imagine these things being submerged at great distances, but maybe so. The mode is typically another sunspot radius outward. So,
but you would think that the stuff in the middle of the sunspot doesn't get caught by the convection outside the sunspot.
The umbral fields, right.
The field lines on the edge that
right.
get caught and pulled down.
That's right. But those field lines, of course, run into the spot, and they would be coming out in the penumbra. They're only submerged outside the sunspot, but not inside the spot.
But it's got to be low-lying ones that are actually can get caught.
Exactly, and that's why it's the low-lying ones which are the ones in the dark filaments. So the ones in the bright filaments, those are the ones that connect a long way away and aren't pumped downward.
But there seems to be in your picture of them going like this.
Mm-hmm.
Why does it pick on certain ones in the comb? And the comb looks rather regular. There seems to be some kind of an instability.
There is a definite horizontal scale for these. It's sort of the width of the white, the light and dark filaments. And what sets that length scale must have something to do with the convective instability that sets in initially and establishes the fluting. But
so you think the fluting brings some of them out?
Some of them down,
and
right.
And then it's caught by the convection.
And it's caught, right. And it's only the one. So before the fluting, before it reaches a sufficient angle, there isn't any flux pumping, and you have a pore with no penumbra. Then you get the fluting, and that depresses some of the field. Some of the field is elevated, some is depressed. And it's only in the depressed ones that get grabbed by the flux pumping and pumped downward. Yes.
Jack, I had two questions. You showed an example of the sunspot and the trace picture.
Yes.
What was striking in that is that the strongest spot corresponded to the dimmest of the field of the emission.
Corresponded to the what of the?
The intensity of emission was very dim at the strongest sunspot and brighter at the weaker.
Mm-hmm.
Do you an explanation for that?
I mean, what we know about the coronal loops and why they're illuminated is that the heating is largely near the temperature minimum or above it, there's some kind of heating going on, and then because the thermal conductivity is many orders of magnitude greater along the field lines than across them, this heats up these individual flux tubes, they light up. So the interpretation there would be that there's just more heating going on at the bright, where the tube is bright. But how that translates to strong and weak sunspots, I'm not sure. One might imagine that the stronger spot would be a region of a cooler umbra, a cooler penumbra, more suppressed convection. You might expect maybe less heating there, but it also depends upon what's going on with the field geometry a little higher up. So.
And in the models of that you do with the emergence of sunspots and so on, do you have any heating of the gas there, or do you assume anything regarding the hydrodynamics of the gas?
At the bottom of the convection, the convecting layer.
Yeah, then? I mean, in all the modeling, is there any heating of the
yes.
gas?
Yes. Well, I mean, in the sun, of course, it's yes. you're carrying the total energy flux of the sun outward in the convection. In the models, the convection is driven by imposing a temperature gradient, imposing a heat flux at the bottom. So this is a typical way in simulations of convection to drive it. You could do it by imposing a temperature difference, or in our case, you impose a heat flux at the bottom and then a constant temperature at the top, which is a little bit more realistic for this case.
Mm-hmm. Jack, could I ask, could you go back to your picture of the classification of these features by
like
that? Yeah. So there must be a phase when the pumping gives you these features that you label 3. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That process would have that intersection moving actually from the left to the from the right to the left, as opposed to the other way around.
Yes.
When you form it, the intersection with the red dashed line would move to the left.
That's right.
So
and
when do you ever see that?
You do, in fact, see that. And in fact, besides these things, what you see in movies of sunspots is the dark filaments extending out in the penumbra. The outer edges of those systematically move in and out. That is, they're always kind of winking back and forth. So you would imagine that this flux tube, it's only pumped down in some statistical sense. It might be bobbing up and down a little bit. But again, because of the shallow angle here, this would give rapid excursions in and out. So you do see that kind of motion. But in addition, then, and that would be sort of near the sunspot. This could be moving in and out. But apparently what happens is eventually the flux pumping just gives up and the whole thing floats to the surface, and that would send it right out across the moat then. Okay, and that's really what's involved here.
Yeah, but if not, let's thank Jack again.
Thank you.